The headlines: Iran launches more missile and drone strikes on the positions of Iraq-based terror groups operating against Tehran. British police release images of 13 suspects in connection with recent violent protests outside of the Iranian embassy in London. And Hamas says Israel will pay the price for its crimes after four Palestinians were killed in a new Israeli attack on the Jenin refugee camp.
Welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Mews. Thanks for joining us.
Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says it has once again pounded bases of anti-Iran terrorist groups located in Iraq's semi-autonomous Kurdistan region. The IRGC says it used precision strike missiles and combat drones in its operation on Wednesday morning, added that it has inflicted heavy losses on those terror groups. IRGC has been conducting raids on positions of the terrorist hideouts in the Kurdistan region since September the 24th. It says it had urged Iraqi Kurdish officials to wipe out the presence of those terrorist outfits. But according to the IRGC, the Kurdistan regional government brushed aside its warnings and failed to adopt an appropriate measure. The IRGC says terrorists in northern Iraq have recently infiltrated Iran's border and attacked a number of outposts. The terrorists in northern Iraq are reported to have capitalized on protests over the death of an Iranian woman in police custody and largely involved in inciting riots across Iran. London police have released images of 13 suspects involved in violence during a recent protest outside of the Iranian embassy over the death of Mahsa Amini. The Met police called the violence unacceptable and vowed to trace the culprits who had obvious intent to cause injury. Five police officers were seriously injured in clashes with protesters. 12 people were arrested during the disorder. Meanwhile, London's mayor, Sadiq Khan, denounced acts of violence by the protesters outside of the Iranian embassy on Sunday. Khan said attacks on the police and communities will never be tolerated. The mayor said a, quote, selfish minority who attempted to hijack the protest must be brought to justice. We were earlier joined by our correspondent in London, Saeed Pourreza. He gave us an update on the Met Police investigation into the unrest outside of Iran's embassy in London.
So what the police is, are doing now is we've heard one of the commanders say that they will not allow such violent actions to take place in London at a time when the police are trying to make ensure that peaceful demonstrations take place, if any, and that they are asking members of the public by releasing the images of 13 of those mobsters to come forward and say whether or not they can identify or recognize any of them so they can go after them. And as the police commander said, bring them to justice.
Iran's prime minister says Washington has taken some steps towards giving guarantees to Tehran as part of efforts to revive the 2015 deal. Hossein Amir Abdollahian made the revelation during an interview with American media outlet National Public Radio. The top Iranian diplomat underlined that the issue of guarantees is of great importance for Tehran that can pave the way for sustainable agreements. The U.S. unilaterally withdrew from the deal in 2018 and reimposed sanctions on Iran. Since last year, Iran and the remaining signatories have held several rounds of talks to revive the deal. Iran is seeking U.S. guarantees that it will never again pull out of the deal. Tehran is also calling for the resolution of the safeguards issues with the U.N. nuclear agency in a bid to revive the agreement. The death toll from a fresh Israeli raid on the Palestinian refugee camp in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin rises to four. The victims included the brother of a Palestinian man who was killed by the regime forces back in April over an alleged shooting in Tel Aviv. Israeli troops surrounded his home and fired a missile at the building. The attack sparked clashes between Israeli forces and Palestinian resistance fighters. The Palestinian Health Ministry says dozens of Palestinians sustained injuries. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has warned that Israel would pay the price of its crimes. A Hamas spokesman says the killings won't deter Palestinians from their path of resistance until Palestine is liberated fully. The regime has stepped up its deadly crackdown across the occupied territories. The Polish member of the European Parliament suggests the United States was behind the recent attacks on Russian-owned Nord Stream pipelines built to transfer gas to Europe via the Baltic Sea. On his Twitter account, Radoslav Sikorsky shared a photograph of a gas leak with a caption saying, "Thank you, USA." The former Polish foreign minister implied that Washington had deliberately inflicted damage on the pipelines. In a separate post, Sikorsky said Nord Stream is, quote, only logic for the Russian president to be able to blackmail or wage a war on Eastern Europe. In the meantime, the Russian foreign ministry spokesman said the U.S. president must answer if Washington was behind the attacks. Maria Zakharova also posted a February video in which Joe Biden threatened to, quote, bring an end to Nord Stream 2 if Russian tanks crossed Ukraine's border. Zakharova said Biden must be responsible for his words and that Europe must know the truth. The European energy crisis keeps worsening. Slovakia's Prime Minister Eduard Heger says soaring power costs amid the ongoing Ukraine war leave his country's economy at the risk of collapse. Heger warned he would be forced to nationalize power supplies unless Bratislava received billions of euros in aid from the European Union. He also reiterated Slovakia's support for Ukraine despite the economic pain. Slovakia's economic growth has slowed while inflation has hit double digits. Russia supplied about 40% of European gas consumption before the Ukraine war. Russian gas flows are still running, but at severely reduced rates, pushing prices to record levels. Moscow says Western sanctions have hindered gas exports. European politicians say that's just a pretext and that Russia is using energy as a weapon. People in four Ukrainian regions have voted in favor of joining Russia in a five-day referendum, which has stirred up controversy. The UN and several countries have pledged to preserve the territorial integrity of Ukraine. We discussed this matter in depth with our guests earlier in the news review program. Let's take a listen.
On this segment of the program, the UN says it is fully committed to Ukraine's integrity after people in four Ukrainian regions voted in favor of joining Russia in five-day referendums. Western countries have also condemned the votes as, quote, illegal and a sham, saying they will not accept the outcome. The U.S. says it will introduce a new resolution at the U.N. Security Council to call on member states not to recognize any altered status of Ukraine. The U.S. ambassador to the U.N. said her country will also bring a vote to the U.N. General Assembly if Russia decides to veto it in the Security Council. Kiev has also reacted to the referendum, saying that it will defend people in areas that have voted to join Russia. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has also called for more anti-Russia sanctions. Votes took place in the self-proclaimed republics of Luhansk and Donetsk in the east, as well as the Russian-controlled parts of Kherson and Zaporizhia. According to local authorities, vote tallies showed people saying yes to join Russia ranged from 87 to 99%. Well, joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have journalist and political commentator Mr. Fred Weir, who's joining us from the Russian capital, Moscow. Also, we have researcher at Institute for Russian and Eurasian Studies, Mr. Greg Simons, who's with us from Uppsala, Sweden. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Weir in Moscow. Well, Ukraine and its allies have already said that these votes, these referendums, would be illegal. The United Nations has expressed its concerns over the referendums as well. What is your take so far on the referendums and the results that they've produced?
Well, look, it is illegal under international law. We live in a world where we are supposed to have a certain number of set sovereign states which exist within given boundaries. They're members of the United Nations. And that is the guarantor of our world order. However, if you look at a map even of Europe, you will notice that even over the past century, it has changed radically in many different corners, in many different ways. It's changed a lot, even in the post-Cold War period. The Russians like to bring up the case of Kosovo, which was wrenched from the guts of a sovereign state, Serbia, by war, and then granted independence. Many people point to Israel, which occupies and annexes other people's territories quite freely. That doesn't make it right, and it's certainly none of it is legal. The Russian argument is that these people are stranded. They don't want to be part of Ukraine. We've gone to war, basically, to defend them. And they should be brought into the bosom of Mother Russia. It's never going to be legal. It's always going to be controversial, but the Russians have pressed ahead with it and changed the whole complexion of things by doing so.
Greg Simon, same question to you also, if you'd like to add anything to what Mr. Weir in Moscow just said.
No, I mean, he gave an excellent overview of the main points, and I agree 100%. The point about this is it's a question of legitimacy and consistency, and as has been pointed out, the UN has said nothing about other countries' annexations, recent ones. And so there needs to be some measure of consistency. Absolutely quiet on Israel and its announced annexation of Golan Heights. And as said before, Kosovo, these things all contravene. And I would say that this is owing to the politics of it. And of course, you get this notion of legitimacy, which on the one hand, they're talking about legitimacy of law, and on the other hand, legitimacy of ethics, and that is namely the determination and the fate of those people in the areas whether they join or not. I mean, if we go back to Crimea, the people overwhelmingly wanted to join Russia, and I mean, having been there well before Russia annexed it, I mean, that was the sentiment of these areas.
Staying with you, Mr. Simons, the Russian president is expected to formally declare the accession of these four regions to Russia on Friday. What difference will that make, if it happens, overall with the conflict itself? And also, what kind of a response are you expecting to see from Ukraine and from the United States and its NATO allies if that does happen?
Well, I think there is a reasonable chance, unless there is some backroom negotiation between now and then, that this will happen. I don't see any concessions from either side on this. I mean, Russia, I mean, this fits in with its idea of demilitarizing Ukraine and trying to remove this military threat as it characterizes it. And the West will respond in the usual way of probably more sanctions or threats of sanctions. But I don't see either side yielding or conceding to the other side. This is going to be an escalation.
All right, thanks a lot, gentlemen. Fred Weir joining us from Moscow and Greg Simons joining us from Uppsala, Sweden. With that brings us to an end here on this edition of the News Review, but do stay tuned. There's plenty more to come.
With less than a week ahead of a presidential election in Brazil, a new poll shows the frontrunner Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva has further widened his lead over the incumbent Jair Bolsonaro. The survey puts support for Lula at 46% in the first round of voting, against 33% for Bolsonaro. The leftist leader has also boosted his lead to a 14-point advantage in a potential runoff. However, the recent polls indicate Lula could beat his far-right populist rival in the first round on October the 2nd. Lula rose from destitute poverty to become the most popular president in Brazilian history. He ruled the country between 2003 and 2010. But fell from grace when he was jailed on alleged corruption charges. But now he is on the cusp of a remarkable comeback, as Bolsonaro has lost much of his popularity due to his handling of the COVID-19 pandemic and the economy. Turkish military forces have launched artillery attacks on several villages in the northeastern Syrian province of Hasaka, killing two children and injuring six more civilians. Local sources say the Turkish troops shelled villages in the town of Babaresin. The attacks also caused material damage. Turkey has been conducting military operations in Syria since 2016 to target Kurdish militants known as the People's Protection Units, or the YPG. Ankara also deployed thousands of its forces to Syria in 2019 under the same pretext. Recently, the Turkish president hinted at his country's plan for a new cross-border operation to purge YPG fighters who form the backbone of U.S.-backed militant group, the so-called Syrian Democratic Forces. The Syrian government decries the Turkish military presence as an outright violation of the country's sovereignty and territorial integrity. Lebanese workers and depositors tried to storm the parliament compound on Monday amid the country's economic crisis. Retired military personnel demanded better monthly pay, while depositors called on the banks to release their life savings. Our correspondent Mariam Saleh has more from Beirut.
The crisis hit Lebanon is once again a scene of angry masses. The parliament is back to meet and debate a new budget. Yet protesters see the budget being discussed as elusive. Banks reopened partially on Monday following a week-long closure in the wake of a wave of holdups. Depositors stormed at least 7 bank branches in the capital and abroad demanding their trapped savings. One woman named Saleh Hafiz forced one branch to give her $13,000 of her savings, saying she needed it to pay for her sister's medical treatment. But she didn't take back her money on her own.
They left us no other choice. We encouraged Sally, and we were with her when she held up the bank because it was a humanitarian situation, and we will be with all the people who urgently need their money. Our government is rotten and corrupt, and so is the judicial system.
A former member of parliament tells Press TV that the government has been procrastinating while time is running out. The governmental institutions, including schools, are almost out of service.
Lebanon's economic downfall began in October 2019. The Lebanese pound has lost around 90% of its value against the U.S. dollar, but officials have failed to put in place necessary reforms. Mariam Saleh, Beirut.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
In the United States, Liz Cheney has said she will do everything she can to block Donald Trump from returning to the White House, something she has said is more important than any policy disagreements with Democrats. Please stay with us for more. The website salon.com has more on this story. Liz Cheney had Trump undermined during the Texas Tribune Festival held in Austin, Texas on Saturday, 24th of September, making it very clear that she wants his name nowhere to be found come 2024. In fact, the Wyoming GOP representative feels so strongly about this that she's willing to switch political sides if Donald Trump becomes a presidential nominee. "I'm going to do everything I can to make sure he's not the nominee," Liz Cheney said. "And if he is the nominee, I won't be a Republican." When asked if she has plans to run for president herself, Liz Cheney dodged the question, according to CNN. "It's not about me or making a decision about what I'm going to do," Liz Cheney said. "I certainly will do whatever it takes to make sure Donald Trump isn't anywhere close to the Oval Office." As far as action items that coincide with her goal of blocking Trump from running for president again in 2024, Liz Cheney said she will campaign for Democrats to ensure that Republican candidates who promote election lies do not get elected, according to CNN's coverage. "I'm going to do everything I can to make sure Kerry Lake is not elected," Liz Cheney said, adding the Trump-endorsed candidate for Arizona governor to her no-no list. Although Liz Cheney is willing to help Democrats in a joint effort to keep Donald Trump off the ballot, an even lean Democrat herself, she pumps the brakes at the idea of Democrats keeping control of the House of Representatives after the midterm elections, believing there to be many bad policies coming from the Biden administration. "I think it's really important, though, as voters are going to vote, that they recognize and understand what the Republican conference consists of in the House of Representatives today." The website Politico.com has also covered the same story, but from a different angle. Liberals who lavish praise on Liz Cheney for her defiance of Donald Trump are making one thing crystal clear. "Don't expect us to support her for president, or any other political office, for that matter." The Wyoming Republicans' anti-Trump maneuvers have lately belied her conservative policy views, particularly on foreign affairs, an area in which some progressives have managed to align with Trump in slamming her as a warmonger. It could be a big hurdle for Liz Cheney as she considers a 2024 presidential run that would function as a means to block Donald Trump from a return to the White House, something she has said is more important than any policy disagreements with Democrats. Liz Cheney appealed to Democrats in her primary race last month, only to get trounced by a pro-Trump challenger. And her close working relationship with Democrats in probing the January 6th Capitol attack is showing no signs of translating into national crossover appeal. Her approach to global affairs isn't the only reason she's getting few Democrats to openly back her for another political office, despite her stance against Donald Trump. But it's a central one. "I've told Liz I couldn't wait to start disagreeing with her again in public," joked Representative Jamie Raskin, a Democrat from Maryland, who's struck up a close friendship with Liz Cheney stemming from their work on the January 6th Select Committee. "Liz Cheney has been a great constitutional patriot during this period, but we have a lot of things we disagree on," Jamie Raskin said. While they hailed the 56-year-old Liz Cheney as a hero for what they describe as a principled act of courage in decrying Donald Trump's hold on her party, Democrats acknowledge that she's no less of a conservative for doing so. And they're not blind to the Cheney who vocally backed the Iraq War and her father helped spearhead that war during his vice presidency. a war which now largely is viewed as a historic blunder fueled by the new conservative foreign policy doctrine to which she also subscribes. Indeed, Liz Cheney's alignment with her father, who has also disavowed Donald Trump, continued long past the 2003 invasion of Iraq. She was also a leading critic of President Joe Biden's decision to withdraw U.S. troops from Afghanistan last year. In a speech at the American Enterprise Institute on Monday, Liz Cheney emphasized that she still believes in limited government and a strong national defense, adding she shared conservative concerns about radical liberalism and wokeness. But she reiterated her belief that those concerns cannot justify what the Republican Party is doing now. The means do not justify the ends. This is how democracies fail. That cannot happen, and it must not happen. Stopping this erosion requires men and women of goodwill showing courage and remembering that no office is worth holding if you enable, through your action or your inaction, the dismantling of our republic, she said. Democrats have no regrets about building Cheney up, largely because they don't expect their voters to support her in any future race. And putting Liz Cheney on a pedestal lends bipartisan credibility to their central case that Donald Trump, who could announce a 2024 presidential run within weeks, is unfit for office.
علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وصي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitani rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wassalatu wassalamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa ala Ahli Baytihi at-Tayyibin at-Tahirin. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of the Charter of Islamic Governance based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. We are currently focusing on the 30th sermon, where Imam Ali alayhi salam explains about, you know, analyzes and interprets this event that happened regarding the murder of Uthman, the reasons why this happened. And Imam Ali alayhi salam was saying that there is a general principle, basically, that whenever there are dictators and there is a group of there's a group that is dictated and there's a group that, you know, is oppressed, and a group tries to uprise against that oppression, they are jazi', means they are complaining, they are unhappy, they are taking steps, they are showing their their unhappiness and their uneasiness, and their they are deterred by this and they are showing it, then know that there is a certain principle that is applied. And then Imam says that that in this situation, the third caliph was a musta'athir. That means he exercised certain forms of dictatorship. And we gave some examples of that. That he was not ready to listen to the criticisms. He was not ready to listen to some of the complaints that very, very powerful and sincere companions of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam had. Apart from Imam Ali, of course. Imam Ali alayhi salam, someone can say, okay, maybe for some, they would not want to agree with him for whatever reasons. Then let us look at the other companions. And I mentioned the other companions at that time. Even the wife of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, even she, at the end of the day, she also spoke against him. And all of these things were happening at that time. And when this group of people came against Uthman, and of course they were not ready, and then there was a group that unfortunately, or whatever, for whatever reasons, they went and, you know, they killed Uthman. And what happened in history happened.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, we give examples of some levels of dictatorship that Uthman had in his time. And we say that these are there. If you refer to Sharh of Nahjul Balagha, or the interpretation of Nahjul Balagha by Ibn Abi al-Hadid, under the discussion of this sermon, you will see that there is a lot of discussion, and he brings so many quotations and citations regarding the type of actions of a dictatorial nature that were performed by the third caliph. And these are, of course, intellectual discussions. Whoever wants can refer to them. If you refer to Tariq Tabari, you'll also see some of those events, as I mentioned in the previous session. So it was a situation where that the third caliph was not allowing people to think out of the box. He was not allowing them to express their unhappiness and their criticisms against some things that were validly wrong. I mean, and unfortunately, that didn't happen. But yet Imam Ali alayhi salam, he says that yes, Uthman, the third caliph, he did some actions of dictatorship that were not good at all. But on the other hand, وَجَزِعْتُمْ فَأَسَأْتُمُ الْجَزَعْ. But then you people also, I mean, those group of people who were expressing their unhappiness, they're expressing their criticisms, they also, unfortunately, they did it in the worst way. Yes, when there is an oppressor and there is an oppressed, when there is a dictator and there is a dictated, then there is a forcer and there are people who are forced and who are now expressing their unhappiness and their anger. When they do that, they're supposed to do it in the right way. But this group did it in the wrong way. In other words, here Imam Ali alayhi salam is kind of expressing his criticism in an allegorical way with regards to those people who killed Uthman. In his opinion, it seems that taking the law in your own hands and killing Uthman without a process of arbitration was not correct.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Now, we come to this situation where we see that Imam Ali alayhi salam says, وَجَزِعْتُمْ فَأَسَأْتُمُ الْجَزَعْ. That you people, you spoke against, you expressed your anger, but you did it in the worst way. You are not supposed to kill Uthman. If really you had some complaints, and yes, your complaints were valid, then your job was to come and take this whole case to judgment. You could take it to Imam Ali alayhi salam. If you accept him as a caliph, then you could tell him to be the arbitrator, to be the judge, to come and explain and take the decision in a proper way, forming the processes of judgment. And yes, Imam Ali alayhi salam was ready for that. If the people were ready to take Imam Ali alayhi salam as a judge in this particular issue, Imam Ali alayhi salam would definitely have accepted, and he would have taken a decision based on justice. Now, when Imam Ali alayhi salam says this, he's not saying that the complaints of these people were wrong. Their complaints were correct. The way they expressed their complaint, the way they, you know, took the law in their own hands, and they went and ended up murdering Uthman, that was something wrong. They were supposed to come and, complain in a legal way to Imam Ali alayhi salam. They come to Imam Ali alayhi salam after doing the work. They killed Uthman. Now they're coming to Imam Ali alayhi salam. Now look, that is actually a lesson for us today, that sometimes we might have true and correct concerns, but we don't take the right steps in expressing those concerns. And when we don't take those right steps, we end up creating harm on the path of truth. Now look, because of this thing that they did, the people against Imam Ali alayhi salam got a very good excuse to come and create havoc in the society. But if they would have taken the right processes, and if Imam Ali alayhi salam would have taken judgment in the right way, you know, he would have followed those principles, which was that he would have definitely done if the people would have referred to him. And he even tried to advise them not to take such harsh steps quickly without the right form of judgment. Unfortunately, they didn't do. If they would have done it, then you could have seen such a, an easy going process that would, you know, be of good for both of the sides and for the whole community at large. Let us pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that we learn from these events of history and are able to apply in our lives. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من نداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال مناه هو في الشدائد مجيد والفضل يمناه هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي رباه.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
A flagrantly racist and violent ex-cop is bringing national attention to a small town in Mississippi where black residents say they were systematically terrorized by police and the court system. Stay with us for an article in this regard written by Mike Ludwig, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Mississippi Town Hired Racist Cop to Terrorize Black Residents, Advocates Say. Here's more. A flagrantly racist and violent ex-cop is bringing national attention to a small town in Mississippi where black residents say they were systematically terrorized by police and the court system. Civil rights advocates condemn the officer's actions and say they are a symptom of a larger problem that extends far beyond one rural community and a bad apple among the local police. A lawsuit filed in federal court this week claims white police in the rural, majority black town of Lexington, Mississippi, targeted black residents and subjected them to false arrest, brutality, excessive fines, and unreasonable searches. The department's discriminatory intent was made clear by the leaked recording of Sam Dobbins, the former police chief, hurling racist and homophobic slurs and bragging about killing 13 people as an officer. The lawsuit argues, in the recording, Dobbins releases the idea that residents fear him. Dobbins made national headlines after a black officer secretly recorded 17 minutes of audio capturing his former boss repeatedly using words while boasting about police brutality. Dobbins patrolled the streets of Lexington with impunity despite a well-known history of harassment, racist remarks, and allegations that he jailed a man on bong charges while working for a different Mississippi county in 2013 and nearly beat the man to death, according to the Mississippi Center for Investigative Reporting, which first revealed the audio recording. The officer who secretly recorded Dobbins reportedly resigned on July 19th. Local aldermen voted 3-2 to fire Dobbins on July 20th to applause from black residents. However, those residents and activists say the problem of racist policing in Lexington and across the South is much bigger than Dobbins. Jill Colin Jefferson, founder and director of Julian, the Mississippi-based civil rights group that filed the lawsuit, said it's time to shine a light on the ongoing racist abuses in Lexington. Representing several local black plaintiffs, the group is asking a federal judge for a temporary restraining order on Lexington police to protect black residents. Civil rights groups and local plaintiffs are also calling on the Justice Department to investigate, as federal officials have done in larger cities with patterns of racist police abuse, a practice that was temporarily halted under former President Donald Trump before resuming under President Joe Biden. Allegations included in the lawsuit also come from witnesses working for Lexington police, who reported that Dobbins and other officers brutally beat residents after handcuffing them or dragging them out of the back of the patrol cars. There needs to be a formal federal investigation, and not just of the one office or two offices or the police department, but of this entire town, Jefferson said in an interview. Adding, it's really hard to explain to outsiders, but every branch of government in Lexington is corrupt. Every branch of government is controlled by white supremacy. Of Lexington's roughly 1,800 residents, about 85% are black. But former police chief Dobbins, the local prosecutor, the judge, the mayor, and other top officials are all white and politically intertwined with one wealthy white family, according to Jefferson. Catherine Barrett Riley, the city's attorney and a member of the family Jefferson described, did not respond to a request for comment. Despite his checkered past, Dobbins was hired by city officials to control the local black population and boost revenue with fines and legal fees, Jefferson said. Residents reported hundreds of roadblocks set up in the tiny town to target and stop black drivers. Two plaintiffs, both black men, say they were targeted and arrested on bogus charges, including for possessing marijuana that was allegedly planted by police after speaking out about police harassment at a community Know Your Rights meeting earlier this year. Former resident Tassa Walden said she fled Lexington and moved to Memphis, Tennessee, to protect her family from Dobbins, who repeatedly wrote baseless tickets and made repeated excuses to arrest her son without a warrant. Walden's son, who followed her and now lives in Memphis, is one of the several plaintiffs in the lawsuit, which lays out a disturbing pattern of racial profiling, excessive force, and sexual harassment by Lexington police. It's a nightmare. It's terrible. People are afraid to even walk down the street to go to the store to pay bills, because every time black people come out, it's always a problem, Walden said over the phone recently, adding, no matter if you ride or if you're walking, it's still a problem, especially the young blacks, the younger generations. It's a problem for them. Black residents filed at least 200 complaints against Dobbins and other officers, despite the threat of retaliation, Jefferson said. But officials failed to act until the recording of Dobbins' racist tirade was released to the public. Even then, two aldermen voted against firing Dobbins. Civil rights groups have said for years that many rural jails in the U.S., often in the South, operate like debaters' prisons that routinely jail people living in low-income communities for failing to pay exorbitant fines and legal fees resulting from minor charges and traffic violations that are used to fill local coffers. Jefferson said such targeting and extortion is exactly how Lexington keeps money flowing into the courthouse and police department while operating in one of the poorest countries in the nation. It's the good old boy network. This is how this works, Jefferson said, adding, what's happening in Lexington is not only happening in Lexington. It's also happening in other places across Mississippi and the South. Jefferson, who is black, said Dobbins once blocked her from entering the local courtroom and threatened to arrest the civil rights attorney if she went inside. Jefferson said she called the office of Mississippi Attorney General Lynn Fitch, a Republican, but was told the local courtroom was outside of Fitch's jurisdiction. When asked if racist policing in a Mississippi town would fall under Fitch's statewide jurisdiction, a spokesperson said she would review the lawsuit and added that Fitch's office is unable to comment on ongoing investigations. However, Fitch is currently focused on defending the anti-abortion laws in Mississippi. And recently, it remained unclear whether the Attorney General will take any action on the alleged racist abuse in Lexington. The town replaced Dobbins with an interim police chief, Charles Henderson, who is also named as defendant in the lawsuit and has a nasty reputation in town. Among other crimes and abuses, including threatening to kill a local resident for being outside at night and targeting him for arrest, more than a dozen women have reported that Henderson repositioned them for assaulting and proceeded to ticket or arrest them if they refused, according to the legal complaint. In an email to the Associated Press, Henderson said he is working to move the Lexington police forward and cast doubt on the claims made by residents in the civil rights lawsuit, which he called a defamation of character. Of course, a claim isn't defamation if it's true, and Jefferson says Henderson must also be held to account. She relayed a story about Henderson breaking down an elderly women's door, blasting her with pepper spray, and then using a fire hose to wash her down at the police station. However, if Henderson believes his character is being defamed in the media and federal court, then a federal investigation would be a good way to expose the truth, Jefferson says. Let's have the Department of Justice come in and look and see what Henderson has come. I would want to see what he has to say to the federal government to show that he did not do the things, Jefferson said, adding, we have a line of people that would go down the street with complaints against Henderson. If he wanted to do that, I would join fight.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here on IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble and informative hadith which has been narrated from Imam Ali alayhi salam. This hadith is about the fallacy of predestination. In it, Imam Ali alayhi salam exposes the fallacy involved in predestination and jabr, which we call in Arabic jabr. Imam Ali alayhi salam said the following while exposing the fallacy of predestination. He says, if it were like this, meaning if predestination were true, the concepts of reward, punishment, the divine command, and the divine prohibition would be erroneous, meaning they would be meaningless, they would lack any kind of, you know, any kind of foundation or basis. The meaning of the promise of paradise and the threat of the hellfire would be futile, meaning it would be, again, meaningless. It wouldn't make sense for God to do such a thing. On one hand, force the people to act in a certain way and then promise them paradise or threaten them with hellfire. And there would be no blame for a wrongdoer. A person who sinned or wronged or disobeyed God would not be at fault because he would be forced to act in that way by God, nor praise for the good doer. Conversely, a person who obeyed God would not be deserving of praise because he would be forced to do so by God. Furthermore, the good doer would be more blameworthy than the wrongdoer. The person who did good, right, would be more blameworthy than the wrongdoer. And the latter would deserve more praise than the former. Meaning, there would be no reason not to blame the good doer more than we do the wrongdoer. Because there would be no difference between the two, actually. In the sense that both of them would be forced to act in a certain way by God. In the end of this hadith, Imam says, this claim of predestination is the claim of the idolaters and the foes of the merciful. You know, it's the claim which the idolaters and the enemies of God Almighty, they make. Or to put it in other words, anybody who makes this claim or holds this belief is actually an enemy, a disbeliever in God, a disbeliever in God's mercy. You know, he believes, in fact, that God is unjust, and in this way he is an enemy of God. Right, so this is a fallacy that, you know, is contained in predestination, and this is the argument that the Imam uses to show that it is untrue, right? So using one of God's attributes, the attribute of justice and mercy, the Imam alayhi salam exposes the fault in this claim. And you know, this is an argument that the other A'imma alayhi salam also alluded to when rejecting this theory. For example, Imam Kazim alayhi salam says, sins cannot be other than one of three cases. Either they originate from Allah, which they do not. And in this case, it would not be proper for the Lord to punish his servant for what he has not committed. Right? Again, so in this hadith, the Imam echoes, Imam Qadim alayhi salam, echoes the same argument that Imam Ali alayhi salam, he mentioned in his speech, in the hadith we recited for you. And then in continuation, the Imam mentions the other two categories, he negates the other one, with another argument, which we don't have time to recite for you today. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the fallacy of predestination in the words of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.